Green Divas and Green Dudes come in many shades of green. Here to help you discover and celebrate your personal shade of green are hosts Green Diva Meg and Maxine Margot, veteran radio chicks who share important news about climate change and the plight of human existence, but somehow manage to make most of it fun and sexy using at least 50 shades of green. Well, hey, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning us in or clicking on our show or whatever you do now.
Turn us on. Yeah, baby.
You know, we've been on hiatus for at least a month, I'd say, like 6 weeks.
We won't say, but it's been a few weeks.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, I moved my home and we moved the studio to someplace different simultaneously. And I'll tell you, that sucks the life out of you.
Moving. I've been in my house for over 30 years. The amount of stuff that's in my basement.
Yeah.
I would be crying if I had to move right now because you accumulate so much, which is really bad. And I want to get rid of most of it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put everything in a landfill.
Right.
So anybody out there with any suggestions on the best way to get rid of my stuff, please send us a line.
Oh, I have suggestions now because I've just done it.
Okay.
Because 2 years ago, we kind of knew this was coming. And so I started to find ways. And I was like, you know, people were marching out of my house with stuff. I'm like, hey, you need a jacket? Mm-hmm. I got one for you.
Mm-hmm. You need a plate? No. Here it is.
But there definitely were a lot of organizations that we did some excessive amounts of donating. And they're very grateful. And they're helping people, so whatever. I won't.
I'll get a list.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very important to give away that stuff to at least people can use it, especially now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people struggling,
especially
right?
Down in areas where there's been some crazy
weather. Oh yeah, yeah.
So
we're not coming from you from Bootin anymore. Now we're in Parsippany, New Jersey. Parsippany.
Yeah. I've passed Parsippany many times.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've actually put my actual human foot in Parsippany.
Yeah, this is actually my old office from when I was publishing and I had my own PR agency. This is where it was.
Well, we're going to get stuff on the walls. I gave you a new
The best.
Present.
or like sort of christening present or whatever. The new studio present from Max is the cutest, and I posted it on Instagram on the Green Divas Instagram site. It's a little kitty with a kitten, literally, with a pink pussy hat on, and it says "Resist #CatsAgainstTrump." and the kitty's cute. Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, you know where we lean, so it had to be. This button had to be it.
Sorry.
I'm not gonna make an excuse for how I feel because I just can't. So I won't.
So, well, while I mentioned social media, please, you know, I'm getting active again on our Twitter, you know, at 50 Shades of GDs.
Okay.
All spelled out.
All spelled out.
And otherwise, it's the Green Divas on Instagram or Green Diva Meg or.
Or at TM Shades of Green. We're still being green.
Yeah.
We're just trying to use every avenue that we have to get the word out.
Yeah.
So,
and Facebook is the Green Divas. And, you know, go to our website. And that's where you're going to find more about us and the latest shows, hopefully, and all the goods going on at thegreendivas.com.
Yeah. Yes, thegreendivas.com. And then, of course, you can check us on multiple platforms, being
iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, and more.
And more, and it's TuneIn.
Right? Oh, yeah, that's right.
The newest one is TuneIn. So check us out.
We used to be on TuneIn when the whole network was on, when I had GDGD Radio, and but now we're just on as our show, which is nice.
Yeah, I was on TuneIn via Bbox.
There you go.
I don't know if they're still on there, but we're back in TuneIn. So tune in, please. We need you to do that.
You have a couple of interesting little tidbits for us today.
I do. I mean, we have a really wonderful guest this week, Zoe Weil from the Institute for Humane Education. And I like to check, you know, this is what I do when I'm just hanging around. I like to check science stories, something that might be slightly under the radar and in tune with,
you know, and sometimes and, hilarious
and in tune with right now the learning and the education. I caught a story that said kids learn moral lessons more effectively from stories with humans than with human-like animals.
Really? And it seems like because there's so many moral stories with, you know, lions, Lion King, of course, or what's the little fish? Nemo.
Right. There's Nemo. There's the Lion King. There's the donkey and Shrek. I mean, there's so many things out there kids identify with.
Yeah.
But apparently, through the findings of Dr. Patricia Ganea, associate professor of cognitive development at the University of Toronto, she said these findings add to a growing body of research showing that children find it easier to apply knowledge from stories that are realistic. And overall, children were more likely to act on the moral of the story when it featured a human character.
Huh. I guess because maybe when they're not human, it's easy to sort of
fantasize.
Just make it, it's not real. It's not real, so it's not really applicable.
Yeah, possibly. So it was interesting to because I, you know, you grow up with Mickey Mouse and he's teaching some stories sometimes, but when you get something from Goofy, then what? You know. But when we have a real story about, you know, something happening, kids seem to pick that up. You know, and it's the human quality that they pick up.
So you'll stay tuned because we have an excellent interview about education and why. Why now? We really need to look at humane education with Zoe Weil. But first, there is fun. This is one of the funny ditties,
right? Another fun fact from science. So this is it. Squirrels use chunking. That's not chunking the tuna. It's chunking the word to organize their favorite nuts.
Oh, come on. Chunking. What the heck is chunking?
Chunking is really interesting because we kind of do chunking all the time,
really?
Honestly, because it's actually a form of organizing. And apparently
sure I don't do it.
Well, these squirrels are amazing chunkers, I guess.
Little things.
Yeah, they have cognitive strategies for putting nuts together. I mean, they put different kinds of nuts together. They scatter, they hoard, and they use these strategies to store food depending on how they acquire the food, which is amazing if you think about it. This pertains to the eastern fox squirrel in California. I don't know if it's the eastern fox squirrel, but Berkeley yeah. University was doing this study, and it was just amazing to see that their ability to remember where they've stored their most prized treats and hiding them for potential pilferers, they know how to organize where to put everything. And this could be thousands of nuts. I see chunking on daily.
I'm pretty sure they're more organized than me and smarter.
I don't know. So, you know, when you're looking at those squirrels, hey, you know, if they could talk, they would say, organize better, you people. You know?
Who knew?
Who knew that this...
Really, could I hire one to help me organize my closet?
I don't know.
I chunk my closet?
I don't know. We could start in chunking, baby, chunking. Instead of ice, baby, it's chunking.
Oh, my God.
So just, you know, so next time when you see those squirrels, just think about them chunking their nuts. I don't know.
That just doesn't sound right. It doesn't, really.
but
sounds like sexual thing.
It's not. It's actual. They like real hazelnuts and different kinds of nuts.
Well, so, on that fun note, there's your fun fact for the day.
Yes, we had squirrels chunking and nuts. But the topics that we are discussing today are quite, you know, important. But we always like to throw a little aside in there, so.
All right.
That's it.
We'll stay tuned because Zoe Weil's coming up.
Do you suffer from allergies and chemical sensitivity? Then it's time to incorporate the EnviroClean system. Utilizing patented technology, the EnviroClean system safely and effectively neutralizes toxins without leaving behind harmful VOCs. From the solid and upholstered surfaces that surround us, to the clothes we wear, to the very air we breathe, EnviroCleanse provides personal environment protection for everyone. Use code GREENDIVAS to get 20% off site-wide at EnviroKLENZ.com.
Thich Nhat Hanh. A quote: "We have to continue to learn. We have to be open. And we have to be ready to release our knowledge in order to come to a higher understanding of reality." A quote I love, a philosopher I love, and our guest this week is Zoe Weil, who also I love. She is the co-founder of the Institute of Humane Education, which focuses on problem-solving, investigatory skills, and creating solutions to issues of social justice and the environment. Zoe is one amazing human. She is in one of the issues currently in Maine Magazine. She's one of 50 Mainers leading by example. And I'm hoping all the maniacs out there check out that article as well, because she's really cool.
Green Diva Lisa lives in Portland, Maine, and we have GD Studio North in Portland, Maine. I've actually done a show from up there, or a couple shows.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. So with that, our extra special, wonderful guest and friend is Zoe Weil.
Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Zoe.
Hello, Meg and Max. Thank you so much.
We're so happy to have you.
So let's just like jump right in and start with what my first question was when we started to talk about doing this interview. And I've heard bits about you over the years through ABBA and Max. But, you know, my question was to Max, like, what exactly is humane education? What does that mean?
So humane education explores the interconnected issues of social justice and environmental protection and animal protection. And its goal is to prepare young people to be what we call solutionaries for a better world, to give them the knowledge and the tools and the motivation to solve the problems that we face in ways that are good for people and animals and the environment.
I love that. And I mean, it just encompasses so much, and it seems kind of fundamental, and why aren't we doing it, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, in this day and age with our current Secretary of Education in this here United States, you guys are more than ever important in getting out this education with an approach of kindness and solutions based on issues that go further than just two paragraphs.
Oh, you said the magic word that I know Zoe has really created a whole curriculum around this cool word.
Yeah.
Solutionary?
Yeah. How did you coin that phrase? And can you give us a background on that and how I can become a solutionary?
Well, sure. Well, many years ago, our former executive director, he came up with the term. And actually, other people had used the term as well. You know, when a term is ripe, sometimes it appears in different places simultaneously. And when he used that term, I just thought, that's the word. I love that word. Now, not everybody loves the word, so if you don't love the word, don't get stuck on it. But if you're like me and you love the word, you love it because it's so clear right away what it means. It's an individual who can identify problems and who can find the root systems that cause them and then address the problem in a way that goes to the core of that root system and transforms it in ways that are good, again, for everybody, for people, for animals, and the environment. Because we can come up with solutions to things, but often when we come up with a solution in isolation, it can exacerbate another problem. I mean, this happens all the time. I mean, just think about how we're always talking about how we have to grow the economy, we have to grow the economy, we have to grow the economy, mm-hmm. even if that means that we're going to use more fossil fuels and pollute more, even if it means that we're going to have more hospital visits, which grows the economy, but at the expense of health. So to think about solutions in ways that are comprehensive, in ways that understand systemic problems and the interconnections between them, that's something that's harder and it's something a little bit different.
Right.
So we have developed a solutionary program to bring into schools, particularly middle schools and high schools, so that young people can learn how to be solutionaries. They can learn how to be systems thinkers and strategic thinkers and good critical thinkers and be able to examine the challenges that we face through very careful, good research, really discerning fact from fiction and opinion, and then devise these kind of solutionary solutions that are good for all. And that's pretty unique these days and so fundamentally important if we want to solve the problems that we face.
Well, and now more than ever on so many levels, not the least of which is that our climate is creating some critical issues thanks to our contributions.
Not in a good way.
Not in a good way. And when you talked about helping kids learn to discern and to do deep research and understand the difference between fact and fiction, there's so much information now at this point in time, so much access to so much information. I love that this offers a new kind of way to train your brain for critical thinking.
You know, these days, if you think about what's most important in education, it's not facts in the sense of memorizing things and learning names and dates. It's being able to discover what is factual, because there's so much information out there, and we need to be able to assess it, and then we need to be able to know what to do with it in this, you know, complex world that we live in, where all of, you know, our globe is interconnected, and we need to understand those interconnections in order to be able to address so many different problems. So the problem is poverty, or the problem is the rates of extinction, or the problem is climate change and pollution, or the problem is human rights abuses. Whatever that problem is, we need those skills. So the solutionary program that we are in the process of piloting right now, and we're developing a guidebook and professional development for teachers, including an online course and learning modules, and all of this is designed for teachers to be able to integrate this program into their existing curriculum, because we know what teachers are up against. We know that they can't just add on something new, that they have to be able to integrate it into what they teach already for this to be viable and workable.
Right.
And so that's what we are doing. We've been piloting this program for the last 2 years. We're entering our third and final year of the pilot. We are working with 15 teachers in the state of Maine this year, and we're developing all those professional development pieces I just mentioned. And then we're going to expand next year and have all of this ready for the development of this to spread. And so it's really exciting. We're in the middle right now of, well, we're in the last week, actually, of a crowdfunding campaign raising $50,000 in order to be able to produce all of this that I've just described. And so we're really, really excited, and we have about $17,000 more to go, and I hope some listeners will want to support this campaign. They can do it by just going to humaneeducation.org, which is our website, where they can learn about us. They can see a 2.5-minute video of students who participated in last year's pilot and the year before's pilot. It's a very short video, but it's so inspiring to watch these young people. And most of the footage is from the Solutionary Summit that we held at the University of Southern Maine this past June, in which these students from different public schools in Maine came together to share their solutions. And it's so inspiring to see what these young people are tackling and doing, and this is what we need for our future.
Right. I mean, in one of the, you know, press releases that I looked at, there was a quote from a seventh grader in the pilot program. And he basically said that the solutionary program, you know, how is it different? And he said, "I'll remember what I'm learning from this project. I forgot what I learned from other projects as soon as we move on."
In addition,
you know, and he says, basically, the solutionary program is hard, but it's fun. And I feel like we can definitely help with the problem.
I'll tell you what was inspiring, and I know you've watched. Zoe did a really wonderful TED talk. You may have done more than one, but the one that I watched, you talked about a couple of different programs that you had done in schools, and one of them was, and I want you to tell us about it here, was about animal product testing and what your students were inspired to do. And these were young ones, right?
Yep. Well, it's that I love telling this story because it's how I became a humane educator. Really, it was the beginning of my career. This was 30 years ago. Wow, I can't believe it was 30 years ago.
Hmm.
And
you were 10, right?
You were 10 at the time, huh?
I wish. I was in graduate school, and I was looking for a summer job, and there was a program at the University of Pennsylvania that offered week-long courses to middle school students. And I pitched a whole bunch of courses, and one was on animal issues, one was on environmental issues, one was a media literacy class, one was a creative writing class. And the animal issues class was this second most popular of the 60 courses that were offered that summer. And it was 5 days, you know, 9 to 5 each day. And in the middle of the week, I taught the kids about product testing on animals. And that's where anything from personal care items or oven cleaner are squeezed into the eyes of conscious rabbits and force-fed to animals in quantities that kill and smeared onto their abraded skin, all without painkillers or anesthesia. And this one 12-year-old boy in the class, he went home that night, and he made his own homemade leaflets. Now, this was in 1987. He did not have a personal computer.
Right.
When I say he made his own leaflets, he hand-wrote them. And he came back into class the next morning, and he asked if he could hand them out, and he didn't mean to his fellow classmates. So during lunch, while the rest of us were having our meal, he went outside and stood on a Philadelphia street corner to hand out his leaflets. You know, he'd become an activist overnight. And I had another student from that course who I stayed in touch with, and he actually works for the mayor of New York on HIV/AIDS issues now. He's still an incredible advocate. And a number of years ago, I was speaking in New York with Jane Goodall, which was quite a thrill to speak with her, and he came to the talk, and I was introducing him to some friends afterwards, and I said, this is David, and he was in the first course I ever taught, the first humane education course I ever taught, and before I could even finish my sentence, he interjected, that course changed my life. And of course, it changed mine as well, because that's where I realized that if we could teach about these, you know, global ethical issues, whether they relate to animals or the environment or people, and now the way we teach, we make sure that all are included in that and they're not separate. If we could do that, that these young people would be able to learn how they could address those problems, and it became so relevant to them. So the quote that you just shared, you know, from one of the students in the Solutionary Program about how this is what I'm going to remember. This one girl, in the video, you'll see this one girl, and she just says so emphatically, we need this in our school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, young people want this. It's a win for them to be able to use their literacy and numeracy and scientific skills in service to actually making the world better and solving problems. Mm-hmm. Schools need it because it's really engaging for kids. And so their kids are going to do better, learn more, achieve more, and the teachers and the school are going to be so much more enlivened by this.
Right.
And, of course, it's a win for the world because these kids are tackling real-world problems. And these don't have to be, you know, it's not as if we expect seventh graders to solve global warming. But what we do hope is that by learning in middle school how to address problems and having success in them, that by the time they're seniors, well, then maybe they really are coming up with some viable, really important solutions to these big issues. So, for example, there's one group that was tackling the problem of a disciplinary policy in their school that was not working. So basically what happened is if kids played hooky, then they were suspended. So they were essentially rewarded with what the crime was.
Right.
And it didn't serve the kids, it didn't serve the school, it didn't serve anyone. So the kids were tackling, like, how can we create a better disciplinary process and policy for our school? And when they presented this at the Solutionary Summit in June, the moderator said, why did you want to do this problem? And this young man just said in such a profound and heartfelt way, I just want everyone to succeed. And I brought tears to my eyes. I mean, here was this high school senior. So they were, you know, these were high schoolers who were addressing that. And they could do something before they graduated to set their school up for a better policy for his peers. And I thought that was really beautiful.
That's a great story, and it proves that there's so many wonderful kids out there. They just want to learn. Yeah. And I have a quick question on a kind of a side note. You said you're working on an online, you know, versions of certain courses. Are you looking at the homeschooled niche at all?
Yes, absolutely. In the sense that what we are producing right now, in some sense, we have we are tackling the most challenging way to go about bringing a solutionary program to people, and that is through the traditional public school curriculum, because there's so many regulations and there's so many requirements, and it's the hardest way. So by doing that and doing it well and doing it right, then, and proving that this can be done and can be effective, and we have this fabulous educational evaluator who's working with us and who evaluated this program and just raved about it. And he was a main teacher of the year, actually, and a finalist for National Teacher of the Year. So we have tremendous respect for him. And, you know, if we do this well in that arena, then it can spread exponentially to reach so many children. At the same time, after school clubs, homeschooling families, community centers, YMCAs, you know, the gamut can use and work with what we have done in ways that it's going to be much easier for them, because they won't be trying to integrate it into an existing very strict curriculum. They'll be able to do it in, you know, a very flexible way. So we want to make sure that we can reach the greatest number of teachers and students in, you know, where they are, which is mostly in public schools. But everything that we're producing, we want it to be used and will be used ultimately within this wider community. So thank you for asking about that. And I should just say that, you know, for any teachers listening out there, we haven't, in addition to online courses that are going to help teachers to bring this into their classrooms, we have an online graduate program through Valparaiso University. We have a Master of Education, and we also have a Master of Arts for activists out there who are listening who might want a master's degree that covers all of these issues. We have that, and it's a really fascinating program.
Master of Arts in Activism? Is that what you just said?
No, yeah. It's a Master of Arts in, again, focused in humane education, but covering human rights and environmental preservation and animal protection and culture and change making.
Hey, I'd like a master's in that.
Yeah. <laughs> Hey,
maybe I'll sign up.
Well, I'm just
awesome.
So excited about this for so many reasons, and one of them, like the way I learned always best was the experiential, make it real world, inspire me in some way. That draws my attention in, and like that kid said, I'll remember it.
Right. My third grade teacher who had a tasting party, and everyone's grandparents were immigrants. Ha ha, ha ha. And everyone had to bring a dish and speak to their grandparent about them coming over and what the dish was. I learned more in that little segment of my third grade life than any time. And Mrs. Tischler, I thank you for opening the world up to me a little bit, because we learned about families. We learned about countries. We learned about food. And you know, it was a different, you know, point of view for many people, because we didn't know somebody from Ireland did this, or someone from, you know, another country, you know, out in Fijis or something. You know, it was just very interesting and something that I always, you know, thought about, and even now.
Well,
I love that.
I really want to encourage our listeners to check out humaneeducation.org, correct?
Right, that's with a double E. It's humane, H-U-M-A-N-E-E-D. Don't forget that second E.
Humaneeducation.org to find out more about how you can contribute, find out more about the programs, about Zoe, and all the work that she's doing, and all the people involved, and the kids. I mean, it really is something we need. I can't even emphasize how much our world needs these kids to be focusing their attention on these kind of integrated solutions for all the stuff that's falling apart.
And raising kinder, more ethical humans on the planet, which is so important in this current atmosphere. to get kids to
critically
thinking, be ethically, you know, motivated is wonderful, and that's what you guys are doing. So we thank you for that.
Yeah, Zoe, keep up the good work, and I'm hoping we'll get to talk to you again pretty soon for an update.
Oh, I hope so. Well, yes, that would be great, and I'm so grateful to you for wanting to share what we're doing with your listeners. So thank you so much.
Bye, Zoe. Thanks again.
You've been listening to The 50 Shades of Green, a collaborative gig between the Green Divas and the Many Shades of Green radio shows, happily recorded at Green Diva Studio. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts and The Many Shades of Green on iHeartRadio, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and Stitcher, among other places. You can find more information about this show and much more on thegreendivas.com.